Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Tuesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXE Acre 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend to taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Adam Patain. Adam was raised in Wappinger Falls, New York. He attended Roger C. Ketam High School and graduated in 2001. He enrolled in the NASCAR Technical Institute in North Carolina and studied there from 2002 until 2004 and graduated with a degree in automotive technology. Following his education, he moved back to New York and began working as a technician in the automotive industry. In 2014, Adam left the industry to pursue his interests in photography. He attended Dutchess Community College and has since graduated with a degree in visual arts. In 2015, Adam began working professionally as a photographer, and with his girlfriend Amy, they created their own photography and video production company, which is called Track 7 Studios. In order to bolster his income while he worked on his degree at Dutchess Community College, Adam began working as a barista at Poughkeepsie's Crafted Cup and has worked there for about 1 year. For Adam, this work is rewarding and keeps him busy during the off-season. In his free time, Adam also co-hosts his own podcast called The Dead Radio Podcast. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Adam.
Thank you.
Now, I've got a quick question, Adam.
Sure.
Are you then a motor mechanic?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really do it so much anymore. But I'm fairly knowledgeable, I guess.
Yeah, so I saw you drive up in your car there. Do you do your own brakes and all that?
Yeah, when I have to, but when I can afford it, I'd rather pay someone now.
Especially when it's cold.
Yeah, it's the worst thing. You get so spoiled having a lift and being inside and all of that. Yeah. And when you have to go to work and on a car on the ground, everything takes five times longer.
Right.
You just don't want to do it anymore.
So is there a difference then between like a car mechanic and a car technician? Or is it just...
Yeah, you can't really be a mechanic anymore. I mean, you can change brake pads at like, you know, Mavis or some place like that.
Because they try hard though, don't they?
Well, I mean, the difference between a technician and a mechanic, a mechanic just changes parts.
A manic mechanic?
Yeah, manic mechanic.
This job is amazing.
Have been done in 15 minutes.
Is anyone else having a green?
So, I mean, I would consider myself when I was in the industry a technician. I mean, I was, you know, Mercedes certified and all that stuff.
Cool,
yeah,
cool.
You know, I got pretty high up there, but it just wasn't for me anymore, you know?
Right.
And having gone to the NASCAR Technical Institute, are you able to like work on NASCAR cars? And
yeah, that setup was kind of, it was UTI. So that they're like kind of a national automotive degree, you know, college. It's like a technical school. And then down in Mooresville, North Carolina, they have the NASCAR program. Which is like fabrication, engines, all kinds of stuff like that, which I wasn't really into NASCAR, but I was into fast cars. So I wanted to learn all that. And I also wanted to build motorcycles when I was a kid. So learning all the fabrication would have been good for that. Never came to fruition, but it was a good experience.
Two questions quickly.
Sure.
What's the fastest car you've ever driven?
Probably a Mercedes SLR. Right. It was an SLR McLaren, right. Which is like a $250,000 car.
Wow.
Something like that. Yeah.
Would you know I was scared in case you crashed it?
Yeah. I mean, you have to test drive it though. So, right. You know, so it was one of those, like the shop foreman.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I took the corner too fast. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Well, it was kind of like when we were down at Mercedes, it's a good thing I don't work there anymore. I can tell this story. When we were down at Mercedes, we would this is Mercedes and Wappinger's, we'd make a left onto Route 9. And then some of these cars, you can get up to 120, 130 miles an hour before you hit splashdown, which is about 2 miles away. Right. And then we turn around.
I thought splashdown was like a term for like going fast.
No, it's the water park down there in Fishkill.
Oh, right, I know you are, yeah, right, yeah. In the left-hand side?
Yeah. So that was our route. We do that kind of loop. Right. And we're required to test drive every car at least, you know, a couple miles after you serviced it. So the shop foreman was working on this SLR, and he was like, let's go for a ride. So
you think you may in your test driving have been able to put on 500 miles?
Ah,
Is that a good segue you're doing there?
I'm trying. Because, you know, your first song is I'm Gonna Be, or 500 Miles by the Proclaimers.
Yeah.
Why that song?
Well, that was one I have this kind of ongoing playlist that I make for Amy, my girlfriend, and we were trying to figure out, like, what songs I was going to bring because, as I think we discussed in the podcast, it shouldn't just be a song I like. It should be something that kind of speaks to me. And that song, even though it's kind of a one-hit wonder, especially here in the States, you know, it's just kind of says to me, like, waking up every day and just trying to be the best person you can be for the people that you care about, especially sure. for the woman that you care about.
Yeah.
So that kind of, you know, makes me think of Amy. So
excellent. Now, this song isn't a what they're only a one hit wonder here.
Yeah, yeah.
They are actually famous guys in Scotland, and, you know, they've had like 5-6 hits in Scotland and good albums, and they're well known in Scotland. Yeah. So,
well, the funny thing is, when Amy was like, "No, it should be that one," I was like, "He's gonna think I'm doing it just because he's Scottish."
Well, you are, aren't you?
You know,
just gotta play to our audience here.
Listening to the song, I had never noticed the Scottish accent before, but in preparing for the show, listening, I was like,
Now when you sing it in the shower for the next 6 weeks, probably, it's just going to be all in a Scottish accent.
Andy singing. And I think they're one of the few bands, and Andy, I think you've commented on this before, most bands, even from England, don't sing in an English or a Scottish accent.
Yeah, this is one of the few bands in Scotland that actually accentuate their Scottish accent.
Yeah.
That's one of the things, you know. Most bands have got a kind of hook, you know, it's maybe their sound or whatever. This is their sound. It's the accentuation of the Scottish accent, and it really works for them, you know.
Especially because, you know, the cadence of the song.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it lends to that, like, walking kind of cadence that the song has.
Yeah, doom, doom,
yeah,
doom,
exactly.
Doom, doom, doom. Yeah, it's a really, really great song. I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I haver, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who's havering to you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more to be the man who walked 1,000 miles to fall down at your door. When I'm working, yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who's working hard for you. And when the money comes in for the work I do, I'll pass almost every penny on to you. When I come home, I'm gonna be the man who comes back home to you. And if I go, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who's going over you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more to be the man who walks 1,000 miles to fall down at your door. I'm gonna be the man who's lonely without you. And when I'm dreaming, well, I know I'm gonna dream about the time when I'm with you. When I go out,
when I go out,
well, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. And when I come home,
when I come home,
yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who comes back home with you. I'm gonna be the man who's coming home.
But I would walk 500.
That was Scotland's very own The Proclaimers singing I'm Gonna Be 500 Miles. Now, guys, there's a line in the song. I'm going to get it, read it verbatim. Give me a second. I should have done this earlier. I'll just read it. When I haver, well, I know I'm going to be the man who's havering to you. Now, do you know what havering means?
No.
No idea.
Right, so Mike, I'm going to ask you to have a guess what you think havering means. When I haver, well, I know I'm going to be the man who's havering to you.
Havering. Sounds like have. I don't know, like, I got nothing.
Adam?
Yeah, I got nothing either. I wouldn't have guessed the growler thing either.
Havering means to talk crap, talk rubbish, basically.
Oh.
That's basically what it means. Wow. So we're havering at the moment.
Oh, okay. Huh. So I wonder where that comes from.
It's just a Gaelic word. It's just a Scots word. It's haver. Yeah. You know, so people use that word all the time in Scotland. Okay. Yeah. You're havering. You know, if somebody comes in and says, yeah, last night I ate 5 chocolate bars. Ach, you're havering.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking rubbish. You're lying, basically.
Oh, right. So it's like the fish was this big kind of
thing. Yeah. So that's you're havering.
Yeah.
So there you are. So there you are. Now, the guys are from Leith, and I want to get this in. And they're big supporters of Hibernian Football Club, right? Mm. Which is... there's two big teams in Edinburgh, where they're from, Hibs and Hearts. And the Hibernian Football Club, the fans have adopted one of the Proclaimer song, Sunshine and Leith, it's called. They've adopted that as one of their anthems. And they play this song at big games, you know, big important matches and stuff like that. And last year, at the end of the season, Hibernian beat Rangers. When I say the Rangers went into liquidation and died.
To Andy's disappointment.
Yeah, he
was
much
heart,
to my
heartbroken over that.
Stop havering, Mike.
Yeah.
The reincarnation of Rangers came back and they played Hibernian in the League Cup final. Now, Hibernian had never won the league in 106 the cup in 106 years, and they managed to beat the Rangers to win the cup, and that was one of the scenes on the television, all of the sea of Hibernian fans all singing with their scarves in the air, singing Sunshine on Leith from the Proclaimers.
Oh, cool.
So it was a very, very cool sight. So yeah. Just a wee tidbit story. Anyway, one of the things I wanted to ask you, you mentioned earlier about your podcast. Could you tell us a little bit about your podcast?
Well, my podcast, I think we have totally different demos. You liked it, right? So
absolutely, I enjoyed it. Now, I was on your show last Monday, wasn't I?
Yep.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, and you can see it on YouTube, I believe. Yeah,
if you just jump on YouTube, type in Dead Radio Podcast, you can find us. We also go through iTunes or any of your podcast downloading apps. You can find us very, very easily. Just look for the biohazard symbol.
Yeah, and you'll just see my ugly mug right now.
Yeah. And there's tons of video. Yeah, I put one up on Instagram of you trying to teach Ryan some Scottish. which didn't go well. Didn't go well at all.
I can't repeat on the show what I was trying to teach him.
Well, I in the United States, I had no idea what he was talking about.
We'll leave that one there.
So the show is it's a little more lowbrow. It's a lot more fun. It's a kind of boys' night out drinking kind of show. We talk music. Yeah. We even talk politics, that kind of thing, when it comes up. We've been avoiding that in the last maybe 6-8 months, but at some point we'll get back into it.
Good. So, well, I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
We'd love to have you on.
It's good for you to get a little plug about your podcast. So
I appreciate it.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acre 90.7 FM. Currently, we're in the midst of our winter pledge drive and working towards a $20,000 goal. If you enjoy programs like Catskill Cabin Conversations, please show your support for community radio and give any kind of donation that you can afford by visiting wavefarm.org/WGXC or by calling 518-697-7400. Thank you for your continued support. Now, your next item, rather, is My Side of the Mountain by... Gene Craighead George. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm assuming this is a book.
Yes, it is a book.
Right.
Yes. I'm assuming you haven't read it, then.
No, I read the synopsis, though. Uh-huh. It's an intriguing pick, given where you're going.
Yeah, that, I mean, when I was younger, so for those that don't know, it's a fictional book about a boy who runs away to the Catskills. I think he was probably between 10 and 13 years old, something like that. And he goes into the Catskills, hollows out a tree, lives in there, trains a hawk to hunt for him.
Particularly Delhi.
Yeah, Delhi. Yeah. So he basically gets on a bus, goes up there, and just starts a life in the woods. On some like family land that his family's owned for generations.
Right.
And this is probably one of the first books I ever really loved and read as a child. So I was probably 10 or 12. The copy that I have is from like 88. So you know, I was probably 6 or 7 when it was printed. And then I remember buying it from the library when I was in probably 7th grade, something like that. So I've had the same copy ever since. And I have tried to run away probably 20 times since I read that book. And it always, you know, that was what really sparked a love for the outdoors and camping. And, you know, then eventually, you know, apocalypse survival thoughts and stuff like that.
Yeah. I've been having those recently.
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah. Apocalypse survival.
Ideas or just nightmares or what?
Ideas, not nightmares, but... just like, what would I do? Is it worth trying to get a bomb shelter? And I've kind of concluded for myself that, like my chemistry teacher in high school said, if there's a nuclear apocalypse in particular, you want to catch the bomb. And some of my classmates were like, does that mean it doesn't go off? Like, what happens if you catch it? And no, you just want to be vaporized.
Yeah, the thing, I mean, people don't know a lot of, like, I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole with the nuclear apocalypse, but you're pretty much right. I mean, if you get a high enough dose of radiation, you're just,
Not only that, I mean, can you imagine you wake up and you survive it and there's only one person?
Well, it's not like the Twilight Zone where the banker comes up from the vault, like he'd have been dead in an hour.
Yeah.
So, having a bomb shelter is not going to help you too much, but, you know, 3 days worth of food and water is a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, even FEMA just recommends that.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when Hurricane Sandy came through, all of this stuff was happening. Everybody's freaking out buying gasoline. I went and cranked up the generator. It was fine. Made sure I had enough food for a week. And that was that.
Yeah.
You know, and then I know some people who I believe we did touch on that on the podcast. Mm-hmm. They were out. They had no power and couldn't leave their house for like 10, 11 days.
Wow.
Because everything was flooded.
Yep.
And most people don't have more than 3 or 4 days worth of food in their house.
So. That's a good point.
Yeah. Honey, I ate the dog.
No. Oh, no. Yeah.
You enjoying your dinner tonight, son? Yeah. That's Fifi.
When I was in elementary school, we read a book called Hatchet. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever read that one. It's about a kid, and he's going up to Canada in like a little charter plane to visit family or something. I can't remember. And the pilot has a heart attack, crashes in the wilderness in Canada, and the kid had gotten a hatchet as a gift before this trip. So they crash in some lake in the middle of nowhere, and the kid crawls out of the plane, which sinks to the bottom of the lake, swims across the lake, and he's able to basically survive starting fires with this thing and chopping firewood, and he gets his own food, and but has a really horrible time. And I remember it's kind of a visceral story in that the kid's getting eaten alive by mosquitoes, and he's getting sick from drinking lake water, and it's just a really raw, but I don't know, for a kid I was like, cool.
Yeah, that's probably the more realistic scenario compared to my side of the mountain.
Yeah.
You know, like the kid does great, and he's just like eating berries, and he's got a hawk
training a hawk.
That's just nuts. That's not really gonna happen.
Well, it's funny because one of my favorite books of all time is a book called Kez, and it's about a young guy who's like a school dropout, but he's actually an intelligent boy. He's just a victim of circumstance, and he takes to raising a baby hawk, a kestrel. And that's what the book's all about, him raising this kestrel and stuff. It's funny you mentioned that about that kid with the hawk. Now, it seems to me this book and this situation, you going to the Catskills, it's kind of like full circle. Yeah. Although it's hypothetical, so do you feel that if you're maybe sitting in a cabin in the Catskills reading this, it's kind of close to home? And all
yeah,
that?
For sure. It would, you know, really remind me of my youth. And I really wanted to bring a book because that's something that I definitely would bring. And I thought about what my favorite books were. And then I also thought about like what do these books say about me? Mm-hmm. And do they describe some part of my life? And that was definitely what I landed on, especially because I've had that same copy since I was a little kid.
Yeah, obviously means a lot,
you know,
to
all,
you.
So. It's all dog-eared and beat up, and you know, it's got like little notes in it. Like, yeah, remember this. Like, this will help you survive when you run away from home at 12.
You know, sometimes I pick up a secondhand book in a library sale or something, and you pick it up and... or if you order a book on a used book on Amazon or something, and there's notes in it, I wonder what this guy or this person was thinking at this point, because I wouldn't have highlighted that part in the page. I would have highlighted this part in the page, you know, if it's maybe an academic book, you know.
Yeah.
And I always often wonder that, you know, what were they thinking when they underlined that?
Mm-hmm. You know? I used to get books in college used; the whole thing was highlighted. I was like, I don't think you really put thought into this.
Yeah. you thought it was a color in it.
I've recently gone back to college as an adult, and I see those, like, it's usually girls, and they're usually about 19, and their hair is just like in a messy bun, and they're wearing pajamas, and they're just freaking out, highlighting everything in the book, and it's like, you can't memorize all of that. You're gonna kill yourself, you know.
There's no way.
But I'm also the kind of person who just does the bare minimum, and then I get a good grade on the test, and that helps me.
Oh, jerk.
Yeah. Right, let's finish off the show here.
I took a grad class, and I remember this dude was sitting there on his cell phone the whole time, knocking the tests out of the park. I'm like really intensely listening and having to record myself reading my notes, listening to them in the car, and when I'm, you know, working out or whatever, to try to cram as much as I can.
Scraping a B.
Some guy's like texting, and he's like, easy. Come on, man.
It really depends on the subject matter. Like, for like rope memorization stuff, I have to do that for sure. But something like a math class or something like that, I usually tend to grasp the material pretty well and can kind of figure it out the day of.
Nice.
But I remember like art history classes, just flashcard.
Yeah.
It was awful. And you just have to memorize, I have to memorize this 100-year-old painting that I don't like.
Crap.
Yeah. The worst was like the stuff from the 30s to the 70s, like that art deco kind of.
Yeah.
You know, like a toilet with someone's name written on it. And
I'm not a huge fan either. And I've read books about, I can't remember if it's Devil in the White City. By Eric Larson, which is about the Chicago World's Fair, and they talk about architecture. And I've read that like some engineers and architects think that it was this late 19th, early 20th century architecture that was really, is it romantic or I don't know, you know, like the really fancy kind of colonial and Georgian architecture that they brought back. It offset, I think it was this Chicago World's Fair that brought this architecture back, made it popular, and kind of postponed the 1950s, 60s efficient box architecture that we see in a lot of like government buildings from the time and houses that were built. And I guess it's efficient and it serves its purpose, but in my opinion, it is just so hideous to look at. And a lot of these older buildings from, you know, the 1800s, maybe not super efficient, but they're beautiful. And I do think that there's value to that. So I disagree when I read these things. It's like, the late 1800s did such a disservice to architecture. No, it didn't. That's when they had it figured out. You're the idiot.
part of why I almost don't want to go back. Like, I was going to get a master's and all of that. It's just like, all of those history class, like art history classes. Like, I love taking art classes. I just don't like the. I don't like the learning part. I like the doing part. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm sure that you will continue to. You seem to take a guy, you continue to learn, so you'll maybe go back to it, you know?
Yeah, I hope so. Hopefully for free. That'll be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, if that SUNY thing goes through.
Oh, yeah, the Cuomo Bernie Sanders thing.
Yeah. If that happens, I will absolutely at least be getting my bachelor's, just because it'll be free.
Well, I'll maybe go for my PhD then.
Yeah.
I think it's just SUNY schools, so you might be able to get a master's.
Yeah.
Another one. Another one. right, okay, your next song, Adam, is Mirror by Monty Montgomery.
Yep.
Can you tell us about it?
So that one kind of spoke to me for a while, and I'm sure you noticed I'm a bit of a drinker the other night.
I didn't want to but so, putting Glaswegians to shame.
So Mirror is about Monty Montgomery's addiction to alcohol.
Okay.
And it's kind of like looking at it, recognizing it, and dealing with it. And that's kind of something that I've been trying to do over the last few years, cut back on things. You know, I set rules for myself and boundaries so that I don't do what I did on Monday every night.
Stops when the phone stops and your face stuff on the call.
That was Mirror by Monty Montgomery. Now, Adam, your next item is a photo of your mother and father on their wedding day. Tell us about it.
Well, this picture I actually came across, unfortunately, I'd never seen it until after she passed, when we were going through a bunch of photos and trying to make kind of a collage for her service. And it's a photo that I had never seen, and it's spectacular. It's the two of them, much younger than me. They were, I believe my mom was 19 and my father was 20 at the time. And they're standing in front of a 64 Studebaker Hawk, which is one of the family cars.
Right.
And it's just one of these great shots where her veil was just kind of blowing in the breeze.
Brilliant.
And it's very, you know, early 80s photography, so it's like very heavy flash, very grainy. My dad had the typical cop mustache back then, so
cool.
So it's just, it's a great photograph, and I just really cherish it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I did a little reading about weddings. I found that the average budget for a wedding, you want to take a guess, what is the average budget for a wedding? What are you saying, Andy?
In today's world?
In today's world, yeah.
$22,000.
$22,000, says Adam? $1, Bob.
$35,000.
The average is $20,000.
Wow, well done, Adam.
Yeah, well done. You know, being a photographer, I shoot a lot of weddings.
And the average of
see,
that.
See, he'd an advantage.
And the there's also, I found the average amount out of that $20,000 that's reserved for photography. Do you guys want to take a stab at that? The average.
Well, he's no getting, I guess.
What do you think, Andy?
$2,000.
$2,000?
$2,500.
It is $2,500. That is the average that they budget away. There's about 101,500 wedding photographers in the United States. We have one here with us today.
The wedding photographer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, talking of weddings, that kind of brings us into our next song. We're talking of Big Love here.
Yeah. Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, Fleetwood Mac. Now, what does this song mean to you?
This song, kind of going back to my mom, it really reminds me of my mom, because she was a huge, huge Fleet. I still have all her old vinyl records from when she was younger, which I still do listen to. And it just kind of reminds me of that time in my life before she got sick, and we went and saw Fleetwood Mac live, and it was just really, really awesome. And then right around that time, I was in college, and a couple of my close friends were very into Fleetwood Mac at the time as well.
What kind of time frame was this?
So this was like 2002, 2003,
right.
Somewhere around there. I think we saw Fleetwood Mac live, I believe, in 2004.
Right.
So yeah, that's about the time frame. And that song really, especially this version, I really, really like. Because it was the first one that I had heard. You know, everyone has Fleetwood Mac, The Dance. Yeah. You know, that was one of the more popular albums, and it is a live album. Mm. And then I remember hearing the original version and being like, I don't like that as much. It's different.
Right. So were you actually at one of the gigs with your mom?
Yeah. Heard the song live. And it's funny because nobody's really about Lindsey Buckingham. You know, it's all about the, you know, Rhiannon and the spinning around and all of that. And, you know, when Lindsey Buckingham comes up and starts playing, that's when a lot of people go to the bathroom, and it's my favorite part of the show.
Now, the song really has some poignancy for you then.
Yeah, yeah. Right. It brings me back to that time, you know, back when I was, you know, 22, 23. You know, not to say that I'm old now, but it was like, I had a lot of big changes in my life at that time. You know, graduating from school, starting a career, starting to feel like an adult. And it was just like a connection to my mom. You're looking out for love. So still. Oh,
That's right. You guys are great. Thanks.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXE Acra 90.7 FM. That was Fleetwood Mac, Big Love. Now, Adam.
Yes.
During that song, Mike, I don't know if you know this, but a lot of people thought and assumed that the female was Stevie Nicks, but it actually was Lindsey Buckingham performing both, created by the way of his voice being sampled and altered in the studio. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
So yeah, because live, it's definitely obvious that it's him. But yeah, the original version is very like electronic and kind of layered and right. Yeah.
The sample was aired several times on Late Night by David Letterman, where Letterman told viewers they were hearing the sounds of CPR. I don't know what that meant, but now this was this was off the album Tango in the Night,
mm-hmm.
A brilliant album, reached number 5 in the US charts. The song, but the album sold like 40 million copies.
Yeah.
It was in the American charts for like number one for like 31 weeks or something like that.
Mm.
Just a phenomenal song. The band's been around for like 50 years.
Pretty much.
Different guises, yeah. Different people.
Yeah, and they went through all their various iterations, and I think
one of the common factors being
they keep getting married and divorced.
Mick Fleetwood yep. has been the common thread, and
yep.
You know, there's been so many different people in the band and leaving and coming back and all that. Yep. Lindsey Buckingham being one of them. But great band, you know, great, the amount of different types of music that they've brought, it's just been phenomenal.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that you can, any one member could leave and they can still do a whole show. When I saw them, Christy McVie wasn't with them. She was touring, she was doing a solo tour, I believe, mm-hmm. at the time. Like I think they were back together, like the complete band, but she wasn't at the show that I was at. And you don't even really notice. Like you kind of go, oh, I would have liked to hear that song, but you heard everything you'd ever want to hear. They have so many great hits.
Yeah.
So it was a spectacular show. I think I saw them in Albany.
Albany?
Yeah.
Times Union Center or something?
Might have been the Pepsi Arena.
Probably the same place. I think they've changed the names.
Yeah, it's been been over a decade now. So.
Yeah, I think that's what it's called now, the Times Union Center.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's move on.
All right.
Let's get into the next item, which is the Yashica Twin Reflex Camera. Is that right? Am I saying that right?
So I did actually bring this.
Oh, because, brilliant, because I was thinking, yes, because I saw that one.
I wanted you to just hold it and feel it and see why I wanted to bring it. Bro, so this is
great, because I was actually looking at a YouTube video of this, of an old guy showing you how it works and stuff. This is great.
Wow.
So it's that camera is from 1957, I believe. It's kind of tough to tell. It could be 57 to 58.
No, it's a twin lens, yes.
Twin lens reflex. So if you hand it back over here, you guys are handling it like it's made of porcelain.
Just a way to break it.
So you can hear how metally it is. So as you look through the top here, you look through this lens, and then this lens is actually taking the photograph.
Oh, it's like a mirrored lens.
Yep. Yeah, so it's not like single lens reflex, which would be SLR, which is the cameras that you think of where you're actually looking through the lens.
Yeah.
You look through the top, and then you look, you actually see the image here, you focus here, and these two lenses are linked. And then the actual photograph is taken through the bottom lens.
Yeah.
It was a very popular design. And I've been searching for a camera like that for many, many years, but they tend to be very, very expensive. And I wound up trading it for an older Nikon single lens reflex.
Well, see, the video I was watching that showed you is this old guy in another, I don't know where it was, somewhere in Europe, and he was speaking a foreign language, so it was like subtitles.
Yeah.
And he was showing you how to put in the film, and showing you, and it was, you know, basically showing you how to use it in the aperture and the just, you know, winding it on and all that. And it was basically saying that it's not very good for action photographs. No, more of a static thing.
Yeah, you really, I mean, the best way, this is really built for like landscapes, that kind of thing, because it's very tough to focus. It's very fiddly. And that's why these cameras kind of lost popularity.
Right.
But people were using them right up until the digital age ended because it's a larger format. So it uses 120 film instead of 35 millimeter. So right. the negative is much, much bigger. So you right. get a much higher quality. And these cameras were so inexpensive with great quality. So they were very, very popular, especially with right. landscape photographers and studio photographers.
So do you still use it then?
Yeah, there's film.
Where do you get your film?
You can get B&H down in New York City. Locally, there's Artcraft Camera right in the Marshalls Mall. Oh. So definitely check
them
out.
Like, do you use like Kodak film and stuff?
I generally use T-Max because I develop at home. So
right.
I just tend to shoot black and white so I can process it myself. I have a darkroom in my garage.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So this camera, like I said, it's not the oldest camera I have. It's not, but it's by far the nicest. And right. it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's really cool. It reminds me of what the astronauts used in their spacesuits. Yeah. I guess it's not the same thing, but for if someone listening isn't quite sure what it looks like, it's kind of a box with two lenses on the front. The top pops open, and you can look down in, and and they needed that if you believe we went to the moon.
which I do.
I'm pleading this. Is it the fifth you plead?
Yes,
I'm pleading the fifth. Well,
you were involved in the cover up.
I plead the fifth.
You don't want to incriminate yourself.
No, I don't know. I don't know what you believe. I don't know. Sometimes I think, yeah, they burn the moon. Sometimes I think, nah. So I don't know.
With a powerful enough telescope or a laser, you can actually like look at the stuff that we've left there.
Ach, away.
Yeah.
Just like an American delete litter behind.
There's a laser reflector on the moon.
That's a McDonald's.
Like you can, like if you go to, like if you go to like a fairly higher end like science college, you can point a laser at the moon and measure the distance.
Wow.
I don't believe you can see the flag. Or a golf club.
Well, you can't. I don't think you can see the flag with a telescope.
Footprints.
Yeah, that would have to be pretty a pretty long lens.
Twinkie.
Yeah. the golf ball bouncing.
Yeah, like still bouncing, just bouncing.
Well, and the next stop is going to be Mars, right?
Yeah, hopefully.
Apparently, there was a bar. Somebody opened a bar in the moon, and the two astronauts went in, and the next day one of them said to the other one, did you enjoy that? He said, nah, it wasn't very good. He said, well, what's up with it? He said, there wasn't really any atmosphere. Sorry.
Now, the next item that Adam's going to be bringing is a K-bar knife.
Yeah, you got to bring a knife camping. And I know a lot of people have brought those on the show, but...
And for good reason.
Yeah, you gotta at least bring one survival item to the show, I think.
Yeah, you've got to be able to cut your sausage and...
Yeah, I would say I've definitely like chopped a lot of like...
Tell me about your knife, Mike.
I have a Gerber blade.
Yeah.
Although my cousin, when he got into backpacking, was telling me he wanted I think it was like a K-Bar 12 or something, just some gigantic Bowie knife.
So so the K-Bar is like it's the military knife. It's like what soldiers used in World War II.
Yes.
Right. I have the little more modern one, but they're still made right here in New York in Olean. So it's a very high quality American made product, which is good to support, you know.
Oh, it's awesome.
I don't know how you feel about that, but
no, but Mike's got a knife.
Gerber blade.
But he's scared to use it.
It has this really nice like serrated edge. Mm-hmm. And so I'm concerned that if it is a baton wood, it's just going to ding it up and it's going to be impossible
But then what's the point in having it if you're not going to use it?
Well, I look at it. And
it's a thank you. Thank you.
It's a cool knife.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah, it's a good point. So,
well, I mean, like the serration is a concern for sure, but I stopped carrying serrated knives a long time ago just because of that. Because you break, like they're great for the first couple of years, and then as you use them, you just can't really sharpen them that well. So, like I carry, like my daily is a Leatherman.
Nice.
But that's just it's just useful.
The MacGyver knife.
Yeah, it's got a couple screwdrivers, pliers, and it's nice and small.
See, that's still the automotive guy. Passes a beautiful looking woman.
Put a flashlight in my pocket,
She's cool. A beautiful looking woman. She's broke down the middle of the road. He can go over and say, hey, I can MacGyver your car. How you doing, sweetheart? Thank you. There you go.
You're going to get me in trouble with Amy.
Now, the K-Bar was They got the contract through for the Marine Corps in World War II, 1942. Prior to that time, in World War I, there was a different knife that the U.S. military used, and it actually was problematic because the blade was weak and would break if they were using it, you know, for cutting wire or for any sort of utility. And also, it had brass knuckles basically built into the handle. So you think, oh, sweet, you know, you get into hand-to-hand combat, you can really punch a guy and let him have it. But the problem was, it was really unwieldy when it was in its in the sheath. You know, you got this these brass knuckles banging around on you, and you could only hold it one way. So you can only fight one way. You can't flip it around, and you're just kind of locked into that position. So, yeah, guys in the military found it really problematic, and so then we now have this the K-bar knife, which is like a smaller, more manageable Bowie knife-looking thing. And just the go-to classic American.
And I feel like if you're camping, it's the one that you can do everything with. You know, you could chop firewood with it. You just kind of baton down with another stick. And you're never going to break it. It's just, it's very high quality.
Easy to sharpen.
You know, and I went with the more modern one. It has like a tanto tip on it. And then it has a rubberized handle instead of the leather handle, just because the leather handle, as it gets wet and beat up, if you don't take care of it.
Slade and stuff like that, you know?
Well, it's like a series of discs of leather that go over the handle, and they're compressed.
Almost and, like fish scales.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Right. No, they call them leather washers. It's like washers of leather.
So if you imagine a bunch of these washers around the shaft of the knife, and then they're all compressed down with a lug at the end, and then like shaved down to a nice handle, and it has a really great feel, but it doesn't stand up to years of abuse.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely would last, you know, a soldier their full deployment. But, you know, if you get it wet and you don't oil it and you don't take care of it,
right.
It's just, you know, I figured a rubberized handle was just the way to go.
Yeah.
Yep. You know? I read that the military did have issues with salt water, that it would pretty quickly dissolve.
They didn't like it?
We're land-based folks.
Imagine Donald Trump. I'm going to ban salt water. I'm going to build a wall at the beaches.
Golly, there sure is a lot of it. Okay, well, I'll try.
We're going to take the salt out.
The ocean's going to pay for it.
Yeah. Take that, dolphins. Taking all the whales' jobs at SeaWorld. Now, your last song is Satisfied Mind, sung by Jeff Buckley. Why that song?
Well, I was always a Jeff Buckley fan, so the first version of this song that I heard was Jeff Buckley. Though I know it's been covered by many people, and it just kind of really embodies me leaving an established career to pursue something that I really am passionate about.
Sure.
So, because at one point I was making, you know, $80,000-$90,000 a year. I was doing very well, but I wasn't
as an automotive technician.
Mechanic, yeah. And, you know, and then the bottom kind of dropped out of the economy. And then as soon as all that money went away, I realized how unhappy I was and how little I actually liked the work. So kind of just got laid off for the last time and just said, I'm going to take 6 months and just figure out what I'm going to do. And I always was a photographer. I always loved photography. So I decided to pursue that as a career. And, you know, I make less money than I did 10 years ago. And somehow I have more money in the bank just because I got smarter. You know, and I adapted, and I realized that I can live with a lot less. And I think that this
good for
song,
you, man. Yeah. You know, I mean, a lot of things in life is about risk.
Yeah.
And taking risks, whether we're thrown into it or we make the decision. And, you know, a lot of people think money is the be-all and end-all, but to me, happiness and fulfillment is the be-all and end-all.
For sure.
The song was written by Joe Red Hayes and Jack Rhodes, and Hayes explained that the song came from his mother, and he said, everything in the song are things I heard her say over the years, and more specifically, and this really connects to what you're saying, Adam and Andy, Hayes said, one day my father-in-law asked me who I thought the richest man in the world was, and I mentioned some names, and he said, you're wrong. It is the man with a satisfied mind.
How many times have you heard someone say, if I had money, I would do things my way. But little they know that it's so hard to find one rich man in ten with a satisfied mind. I satisfied my my friends and my loved ones, I will leave, there's no doubt. But one thing's for certain, when it comes my time, I leave this whole world, oh yeah, oh yeah, with a satisfied mind. One thing's for certain, when it comes my time, satisfied mind.
That was the fantastic Jeff Buckley. Superb singing, superb song, Satisfied Mind. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. Currently, we're in the midst of our winter pledge drive and working towards a $20,000 goal. If you enjoy programmes like Catskill Cabin Conversations, please show your support for community radio and give any kind of donation that you can afford by visiting wavefarm.org/WGXC or by calling 518-697-7400. Thank you for your continued support. Now, Adam, unfortunately we could talk for another few hours, I'm sure, but unfortunately, we only have an hour, and we're running out of that hour. Now, before we go, we have one more question to ask you. But I know that, you know, given where you work in the Crafted Cup, that you will need some time to answer this question. But that question is, Mike,
how do you take your coffee?
How do I take my coffee? That's tough. If I'm just looking for a caffeine fix, it's usually our light roast with a little bit of soy milk. But I would say my favorite drink would be a cortado. So that's a double shot of espresso with an equal amount of steamed milk on top. It's also like my go-to when I go into a like a new coffee shop. I go, can I have a cortado? And if they go, well, what is that? Then I go, I'll have a drip coffee. Thank you.
It's so, your way of gauging their ability.
If they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's basically just a short latte.
I'm sorry, guys. Before we wrap it up, I forgot that I had this really cool fact about the K-Bar knife. Mm-hmm. They got the name. This is from the Union Cutlery Company of Logan, New York, before they moved to Olean. But in 1923, they got a testimonial letter from a fur trapper who used the knife to kill a wounded bear that attacked him after his rifle jammed. And because the letter was only partially legible, the part of the letter that read, "It helped me kill a bear," only read as K-Bar.
You're kidding on.
So that's where it comes from.
Awesome. Seriously?
That's what it said. Yeah.
Wow.
That sounds made up, but that's awesome.
Yeah. That's great.
So.
Fascinating. Seriously, that is a fascinating.
Yeah. K-Bar. Well, all right,
new,
Mr. Scary Witchman.
Appreciation for it.
Yeah. So, Adam, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, really I appreciate it. Yeah. And good luck with your podcast. I hope it continues to grow in strength.
We're picking up a little steam. I hope this gives us a little bump, and you know, hopefully we don't horrify your listeners.
Absolutely. You've been one of our highlighted guests.
All right.
Thanks again, Adam. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Hi, I'm Adam Patain, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone at WGXC. Thanks.